Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
This is the Seahawkers Podcast, quick reaction show for the Seahawks and the Detroit Lions. The Seahawks come away with the 28-14 victory in Detroit, and I'm joined by my good buddy, Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
You know what, Brandon? It's good to be with you here today after a win, but you know what's better than one Adam on the Seahawkers Podcast? Two Adams, double dose of Adams this week. Welcome in, Adam Nathan of the UK Seahawkers Pedestrian Podcast. Thanks for joining us, man.
My pleasure. I immediately disagree with the idea that I could possibly be adding to this show rather than taking away from it with the two Adams, but I'll happily take any praise coming my way. Don't worry about that.
Well, see, we have to get the full perspective of a game of this magnitude from all three of the you know, possible ways you could look at this game. You expected the Seahawks to lose. Adam expected it to kind of be close. And I fully expected the Seahawks to win. So we get to come at it from all angles in this game. And you get to explain why you picked against our own team.
It's pretty frustrating that I now have the moniker of expecting to lose when on my own show, I said the Seahawks would win. But I think in America, you call it choking. In the UK, we call it bottling it. Oh. And I basically bottled my pick at the last minute. I always send my picks into Stu, much to his chagrin, about 1 hour before the deadline. And he has to import it because I'm very superstitious. So I send him the picks and he puts them into our spreadsheet because that keeps me on a winning track. And just at the last minute, I bottled it and I went Lions, and I thought they were going to be better and I thought we would be slightly worse. And I got my comeuppance, but I guess if you're going to lose by winning. So I'm cool with it.
Yeah, we also, in this neck of the woods, we don't just call it, choking, or as you do, bottling it. It's also known as cooging it. So you cooged it. Good job.
I'm not sure you can even say that anymore this season, unfortunately. I mean, as a true lover of the Cougs cooging it up, I can't really.
That's true. They're in first place now with the win over Stanford.
Yeah, but I'm still taking shots.
Can we talk about the Seahawks on the Seahawks podcast?
Especially after a really cool win
win. Can you win the game in the second quarter? It sure seems that way. The Seahawks scored 21 points in the second quarter, and Seattle is on a 50-game winning streak since 2012 when they're up by 4 points or more at halftime. 50-0.
Wow. That's a lot. I would have no idea that's the case. I mean, yeah, that feels right.
Well, yeah. But
if you would have put me on the spot, there's no way I would have guessed 50. I'd have said maybe 10. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a huge number.
Isn't that huge?
But they did go out there and dominate, man. That was really fun to watch. Yeah, I mean, for me, and I know this isn't like groundbreaking analysis or anything like that, but it remains true. Man, the way the defense stopped the running of the football of the Detroit Lions and the way that our offensive line and our backs dominated in the running game on offense. That's the storyline of the game to me, period.
Yeah, clearly dominant on the line of scrimmage. Kerryon Johnson, the second coming of Barry Sanders, gets 8 attempts, only goes for 22 yards. That's going to take a ding on his yards per attempt, number two in the NFL.
2.8.
Matt Stafford had more yards per attempt. He had 1 attempt and 6 yards. So he wins the day for the Lions and their running game.
And he also loses the day by throwing his 2 boneheaded throws that he throws every game and then makes a boneheaded fumble, just dropping it. I mean, I don't know. Was that your feeling of Stafford coming into this game, Adam? That, like, to me, I always look at him as like, yeah, he's supremely talented. He's always going to do that one really stupid thing at an inopportune time.
I live life as the eternal sporting pessimist. So I always figure that is what Stafford is, but will get the game where he plays perfectly clean, slips out of the pocket every time, slings those kind of sidearm baseball style throws to a receiver that hasn't caught a pass ever, which goes for 63 yards and a touch. So that's the kind of the way I live my life when it comes to sport. But I have to say, Adam, you've just summed up what you thought the team story was. The quarterback had a perfect passer rating. And I'm a guy that kind of drinks the Kool-Aid a little bit on the whole idea of rushing, and maybe it doesn't matter as much. And obviously the running game has been hugely important. But for me, the story today was an impeccable quarterback performance backed up by very good rushing versus the other way around.
Yeah, if your team running doesn't matter, then this is the perfect game to look at where you go, oh, look at Detroit. They can't run the ball, and they get dominated by a team that can run the ball with Chris Carson carrying it 25 times, 105 yards, and a touchdown. And then it perfectly complements Russell Wilson, who was 14 of 17 for 248 yards, three touchdowns, 14.6 yards per attempt, which beats Dave Craig's record from 1986 in a game where he had 14 and a half yards per attempt with a minimum of 15 attempts.
Look at Mr. Obscure Stat Guy today. I'm so impressed.
That was courtesy. Okay, I should give a little bit of credit to Bob Condotta on Twitter for pointing it out that if Russell did finish, he would have that record. So I did confirm it, though, and went back to the record book. So assist with Bob on that one.
That's fine. I mean, you still had to remember it and bust it out right there. Like, that was pretty amazing. Yeah. Russ was taking shots. And I mean, I think I had put up in the Ring of Honor page at one point, they're like, man, he's playing with fire today, because a lot of those throws were tightly or hotly contested throws that could have gone either way. He could have almost as easily had three picks as three touchdowns. So I guess, Adam, what I was thinking earlier about the idea that the running game was the big part to me, and then also stopping Detroit's running game, those two things being the bigger part of it to me, it was because Russ, yeah, he ended up statistically having a perfect day. It could have just as easily gone the other way.
Sure. And I guess in a lot of these road games, especially the 10 a.m. starts, I think back to New Orleans a couple of years ago, Tampa Bay a couple of years ago. It's amazing how often those three touchdowns do become three picks with him. But I guess we'll just take the performance we got today and grasp it and cherish it for dear life.
Yeah, I ain't bitching. I'm sorry if that's the way it sounds, because, yeah, that's my quarterback. I'm excited about it for sure.
Well, three touchdowns on the day for Russell Carrington Wilson. That now puts him in the top 10 all time among quarterbacks who have had a number of games with three or more touchdowns and no interceptions. He has 18 games in his career. The only other quarterbacks with more. You got Tom Brady at number one, Peyton Manning number two, Drew Brees at number three, Aaron Rodgers at number four, Favre, Roethlisberger, Philip Rivers, who we'll see next week, Tony Romo, and Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan at the bottom with 20 games. So Russell will need three more games like that to move into ninth place.
Well, he played himself a whale of a game. And I mean, that's exactly what Seahawks football needs to look like. Just him taking those chunk plays, because the 14 yards per attempt, that's a huge number, clearly. And it's just really indicative of where this offense has gone. I mean, I got to give Schottenheimer a lot of credit here. Like, I'm seeing a commitment to the run game that wasn't there early. I'm seeing creativity in formations as far as doing a lot of the things the Rams do, getting in bunch formations, tighter formations to then spread them out on the perimeter as the receivers take their breaks. And then also implementing the jet sweep and other action that comes off of that. Having Russell Wilson keep it a couple times on the read option to keep the defense honest. I'm seeing all of these things come together for Brian Schottenheimer, things I didn't think he was capable of. And this looks like a much more modern offense than I feared it would look like under his regime.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, the first four games were Stone Age, really. It was running for the sake of running. And even today, I have to say, I mean, we must have, with those numbers you just gave, Brandon, we must have run it 35 or so times versus 18 passes. I kind of reckon that there were, you know, a few drives that started with a rush on first and a rush on second down that you could probably turn one of those into a pass and maybe sort of close that gap a little bit. And I almost feel like we could have scored more if we committed to passing it slightly more. I know that's maybe against the philosophy they want to go, but, you know, we were just dealing. I mean, some of the play actions, the schemes, you know, that play to Dixon was just not the touchdown. The, I think it was a third and one pass.
Yeah.
Off. It was just beautiful. Like, I love stuff like that. And I kind of feel that that was always on, and, you know, maybe they want to rush on first and second down regularly, but going into games against teams like the Chargers, the Rams, the Packers, where it's likely we're going to have to score maybe into the 30s, it's quite heartening to know that those options could be there, you know, to throw it a bit more and maybe score more points if needed.
Yeah, that third and one play, I think that was the one where I saw a lot of people on Twitter and Facebook, you know, kind of giving props to Schottenheimer for that particular play call in that situation. Because, and it really, it sets up well, because you are now thinking at third and one that here they are, they're just going to run the football. And for Dixon to kind of just sneak out and pick up a 42-yard gain on that play. How about Ed Dixon in his first game back with the Seahawks? Two catches and 54 yards, one touchdown. nice to see him get a little bit of love in the passing game, along with touchdowns with David Moore and Tyler Lockett.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that Dixon play, because the second the ball snapped and I see Russell starting to drop back, I'm like, no. And then, yeah. Like, because it's not what I was hoping for at all, but it totally worked out. Now, later on in the game, down by the goal line, they messed around throwing the football on fourth down rather than just punching it in.
And on second down, trying to get it to Baldwin on the side, and he can't get his second foot in. And, not able to run it in on third down.
Can we just learn our lesson? Can we just learn our lesson and just run the stinking football? That's all I want there.
I think they were trying to get Baldwin a little bit more involved. And, you know, he only had the two catches on the day, 26 yards. But
I'm trying to win.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And
like, I don't think throwing the ball in that situation gives you the best chance to win.
And even the points from the field goal, I was worried that was going to come into play at the end of the game as well. But fortunately, they win by two scores. And a big part of that, the reason why it wasn't closer for the Lions at the end, you talk about the boneheaded throw, Matthew Stafford throwing it right to Justin Coleman at the goal line, stepping in front of Golden Tate.
Yeah, that was incredible. It's often strikes me how insanely athletic these guys are. And on TV, obviously, things look a bit slower. I cannot even imagine how hard it would be for Justin Coleman to catch that pass, let alone get anywhere near it with his hands with the speed that Stafford was slinging it at. But that was an incredible play. And having been completely posterized, unfortunately, by Kerryon Johnson earlier on when he got thrown to the ground on a rushing attempt and really made to look quite stupid, unfortunately, that's a hell of a way to bounce back. And I was really chuffing. And I was saying to you before we started that he really has a clutch gene in him. And when you need a play, Justin Coleman seems to be a guy that really pops up and makes it for you.
You had two guys in this game on the defense who really made up for plays where they looked bad previously. And the first one, the Detroit Lions, you know, they drove right down on their very first possession of the game, throw a touchdown. Tedrick Thompson on the coverage on that touchdown whiffs, but then comes back and he gets the fumble recovery after the Lions are going to be getting the ball after the Seahawks touchdown in response. And that's what helps put the Seahawks up early ahead of the Lions.
Yeah, the defensive backfield, I think, made big plays when we needed it a lot. And they definitely were doing the bend but don't break philosophy. I mean, you could tell that. Sure, Detroit was converting a lot of third downs and getting up and down the field to a degree, but they weren't going to let another big play hurt them over the top. And I mean, that second touchdown, they got him a little bit on that. But I mean, that's more of a mid throw rather than like a bomb. And that's all they were trying to do. They're just trying to keep everything in front of them. I saw a lot of criticism online towards the pass defense in the sense that the corners played poorly. I think they actually executed the game plan really well. Did you see it differently, Adam?
I always see it as a, you know, relationship with front to back, and the pass rush probably does need to be addressed at some point because we weren't getting a hell of a lot of pressure on Stafford. And, you know, for a veteran guy that does sling it around and throw a lot of touchdowns, you're asking an awful lot for the cornerbacks, in my opinion, to play a hell of a lot better than that, given the fact that we're not getting that much pressure on Stafford. I'm not sure how many times he was sacked, maybe twice, but he is a slippery kind of guy and he does get out of situations. And I thought that some of the criticism I saw, you know, I saw someone saying Shaq Griffin, you know, is regressing this year, which I thought was a strange comment. You know, Tedrick has his moments, but in general, given the fact that we weren't that dominant up front on the defensive line, I thought that the defensive backs did about as good a job as you could ask from them.
The only thing I can think of when it comes to Shaquille Griffin is maybe there's the expectation of a little bit more growth from last season to this season. And he does have a couple more interceptions than he did last season, but for him to get, he has been beaten on a couple plays this year. I don't have a problem with it. I'm more than happy with the way the secondary is playing, even without Earl, for them to shut down Matthew Stafford, only hold him to 14 points when they are in the type of mode where they have to throw play after play after play. It's kind of my expectation that when you're up 28-7, that, yeah, you're going to end up with a high stat line of passing against you. And it's to be expected because the defense was making sure that they weren't going to allow those big plays down the field. We saw Bobby Wagner back there like the third safety throughout most of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, that was kind of an interesting different scheme there that we haven't seen before out of defensive coordinator Ken Norton. But yeah, so what you're saying is that yards don't quite matter. Like, you'll give up a bunch of little dink and dunk yards rather than, you know, giving up the quick score. Now that 3-score lead, you know, evaporates in an instant rather than evaporating over the course of a quarter and a half. I mean, you're trying to get the clock is your friend at that point. You're just trying to get out of there.
Yeah.
And you keep them on the field, let them move the chains. Fine. No big deal. Look, we all seem to forget that Richard Sherman sometimes got beat inside and underneath. It happened. Like, no, I saw it with my own eyes. I mean, I know he's the greatest corner in Seahawks history, but he still got beat underneath sometimes. And that's all I'm seeing out of Shaquille. He just gets taken advantage of underneath a little bit.
And then that one over the top on the second touchdown.
And he thought he had help over the top. So, I mean, he's still a young dude. He's barely into his second season, and like now, oh, he's regressed and he's terrible. At the very least, he's every bit as good as he finished last year, and that was pretty darn good.
Well, another guy going into his second year, David Moore, the leader on offense and catches, 4 catches on 4 targets, 97 yards, a touchdown, and a touchdown catch where it bounced off his shoulder pad, then bounced off of his helmet, and still has the concentration to hang on to the ball.
Yeah, I mean, he's great. I mean, partly the Seahawks haven't really had a guy like that since Sidney Rice. So you're looking at probably 5 years since then. And, you know, you've seen people like Chris Matthews, Kevin Norwood come through the door, even Brandon Marshall fairly recently. We've always spoken about that big body receiver that we'd love Wilson to have. And he's definitely good. And I wonder if part of the reason we love him is that we've just been wanting a guy like this for such a long time. And seeing him, you know, go up and make big plays, you know, getting one from in front of a guy's face mask and, you know, winning a bobbled catch and just taking one, you know, on a deep ball over a guy's shoulder. I just love watching it. And as much as it's brilliant to have players like Lockett and Baldwin, who have been superb, you know, Paul Richardson for a long time, having that big bodied guy who's also got the speed on the outside, it's really exciting.
Yeah, and you were naming big body guys that are like 6'5", 6'6". You know, Moore is more of the big body guy in the sense of DeAndre Hopkins, but definitely a guy who is physical and, you know, can take control of the football.
Well, it's amazing to see a guy go out there and turn 50-50 balls into more like 70-30 balls.
Yeah.
Like that, when a guy can increase your odds for completion in those situations that much, and he really does, he attacks the ball and he has amazing hands and apparently amazing concentration on top of all of it. Apparently, he might be the best human being that's ever walked the earth. But but David Moore really has emerged, and it was all of these things that we had been told throughout the offseason to look for. Well, watch this guy. And it feels like that camp hype and all that stuff. I think I'm ready to say he's the real deal.
Well, he's moved up from being the number 5 guy. And just a couple weeks ago, we were saying he was the number 3 guy. I mean, how long before we're saying that David Moore might be the number 1 on this team? I mean, it could happen. And look, if he continues to go like this over the next few games, consistency is key.
Oh, absolutely. But that's in range, don't you think, Adam? I mean, I'm thinking it's in range.
For sure. And I kind of feel that when it comes down to receivers, you have two number ones. You have your number one speedy, smaller guy, and you have your number one bigger guy. You know, I'm trying to think of a team that's got that. But, you know, look at the way that the Chiefs are playing. They've got Sammy Watkins and Tyreek Hill that they give, you know, fairly equal throws to ask to do different things. I think David Moore is certainly, you know, come up trumps in the sense that when it comes to that guy that you need a play from that guy, he is technically your number one of that type of receiver.
So I think we all agree that he's real, and this is not an aberration. Now, I want to ask you guys, do you believe in this offense? Do you think this is real? And the last 3 games are averaging 28.6 points per game, making it look easy. I know Adam was talking earlier about the idea of, you know, having to keep pace with the Packers in a shootout or the Rams again at the shootout. This offense is looking like it can go toe to toe with about anybody.
I definitely think they can do it. I was one of the biggest critics, and the first 4 games, honestly, I was so bored. I turned the Rams game on and I was honestly dreading it. I thought we were going to score 14, give up 45-50. And just seeing that energy was great. And then you go into the Raiders game and you think, well, you know, was that Rams game just playing up to your opposition? And they stomped all over Oakland. But then you're like, Oakland are pretty terrible. Can they do it against, you know, a tough team, you know, in a difficult situation, in a 10 a.m. game against a team like Detroit, who normally give us problems. This was a real test. And I think to come through a game like that with such flying colors, if you don't think that there's something there, you've got to be really cynical, and I'm cynical, but you've really got to be quite a downer if you can't at least get excited and hopeful that there's a real team there now.
Well, and the thing is, we still have four games to decide now. We talked about this really being the most difficult stretch for the team. Well, now you get to face the Chargers coming up next. It sounds like Joey Bosa may still be out in this game coming up, but, you know, an offense and a quarterback that has consistently taken the Seahawks defense apart in the past, so that you have to be able to keep up with that. And right after that, you have another game against the Rams, and then you have the Packers at home, and then you go all the way across the coast to Carolina. So it's looking like it's real now after these last few games. And if you're able to carry it over for the next four games, look the heck out for all the other teams in the league coming, you know, in December and then come playoff time.
Yeah, if the Seahawks even go 2-2 during that stretch, I would consider that a win.
Like especially if they're putting up the similar numbers like this, right?
Right, yeah. If they're highly competitive in every game and, you know, just happen to lose two off of turnover luck or something of that nature, because that's probably the biggest thing for them to be really successful over these next four games. If they were to go 3-1, 4-0, they would somehow have to continue to recapture this magic regarding turnovers. Like week in, week out, they are turning people over. We talk about all the time. Sometimes it's just luck, and also sometimes it's just habit. And this team feels a lot more like the 2013 team that had that habit of creating turnovers, to me anyways.
Yeah, and it's probably worth saying that when the season started, we all probably looked at the season and said, well, you know, it's a rebuild year. We've lost a lot. We're trying to refit some stuff around. And even if, and I, you know, hope this doesn't happen, but even if they went 0-4, but they played in the same style that they have done, and they just got beaten by four better teams, I don't think that'll happen. Because I think if they play like that, they'll beat the Packers, and they could well beat the Chargers and the Panthers. I just want to see that there's something being put in place and be watchable. Because for me, the target was always be back to where you were next year. And for me, anything we're getting now is a bonus. Now, I know that sounds a bit negative and, you know, maybe too long-sighted versus let's try and win now, but just show me the same stuff that you've shown in the last, you know, 3 weeks, and don't make me think that everyone needs to get fired in the off season. And I'll kind of be happy. I don't know if that's maybe too negative a thought process.
I can understand not being ready to be all in on the team just yet. I know we've had a lot of questions in the house.
It's worth coming. I did just text three friends in America saying I'll see you in Atlanta in February. So I am dreaming. I'm right in. But now I've calmed down a bit. That's my kind of realistic take.
Okay.
Well, I think if they can continue this running attack, and especially with Chris Carson setting the tone.
Yeah.
I mean, good Lord, that's the closest thing I've seen to Beast Mode since Beast Mode. Like, I mean, he has that sort of physical presence. I'm not saying he's
105 yards.
Yeah, but he's at least he can be 80% Marshawn, right?
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like he's about there. He's just thumping people. Hey, that kind of energy is infectious. Between him and his attitude, and with Sweezy,
DJ Fluker, yeah.
Dude, these guys are some mean mama jammas. Like they you don't want to mess with them.
And a physical receiver like David Moore on the outside, too. I like having a physical football team. And I do want to go back to one of the other David Moore plays, the catch that he made on the sideline and illustrating the benefit of the rule change with receivers and maintaining possession and not having to control it through the ground. Heads up call by Pete Carroll to throw the challenge flag in that particular situation. I wasn't sure if we were going to win that particular challenge, but I'm glad we did, and I'm glad that they called it in according to how the rule has been changed.
I like that rule. I think it's better. I mean, a good analogy I've always heard is, as a human, if you're an adult, if you throw a pencil up in the air and catch it in your hand, when the pencil's in the air, you're still in control of the pencil. And it annoys me that you have to, you know, do three pirouettes, two jumping jacks, and a burpee and a squat in order to be deemed in control of the ball. Moore had about five steps backwards with that ball pinned against his shoulder. And I think that, yeah, they are trying to make the rules more beneficial to the offense. But I think that's one that was rightly changed. And I'm probably saying this because it was us catching it. And if it was Marvin Jones at the end, I'd be screaming that it's the worst call of all time, apart from that ridiculous pass interference play. But I was pretty pleased to see that call. And it was funny that every single person had a massive climb down on Twitter from, Pete, what the hell are you doing with that challenge?
And the thing was, is I was like, sure, challenge it. I wasn't mad at the challenge, but I'm not going to lie. In that moment, yeah, I had no idea if they'd call that a catch or not.
Oh, I had no expectation that we were going to win the challenge. I thought it was just a good opportunity to try and challenge it.
Right. And what was cool was, to me, I mean, if I'm just going to be honest about that play,
yeah,
that looked like a legitimate catch to me, mm-hmm. and the rule held that up. Like, it matches the eye test.
Yeah.
Like, at least I'm happy with that. Even though in the moment I was like, I don't know what the hell they're going to call here. Well, now I have a little more clarity.
Well, one other play that I want to discuss before we get out of here from the quick reaction show. At the end of the game, the Seahawks backed up in their own end zone. Michael Dixon takes the punt, rolls out right. I was expecting, going into that punt, part of me was expecting that they might try and take a safety in that position, being up two scores, and, you know, for him just to run some time off the clock, step out of the back of the end zone. That way it gives him a little bit more room to give the ball back to the Detroit Lions. But then when I saw him running forward, I was saying, no. Fortunately, he does get beyond the first down marker. But holy smokes, if he gets stopped short there, you're giving the Lions an awfully short field. I don't know if I agree with the idea of giving Dixon the option in that particular situation, but I am glad that he got the first down.
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I think Michael Dixon needs a nickname, like it's time.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you guys, but like, leader in the clubhouse so far to me is the cojones. Like, cause he has all of them. Like, to do that as a rookie in that moment, because you're right, Brandon, that doesn't become a first down. If he doesn't quite make it, that's a bad play. But yeah. I don't know, Adam, I was thinking yes, as he started to run. Were you like Brandon's no?
You have to sympathize with me a tiny bit here, because as a sporting, an English fan who's a lover of all sports, Australians are my mortal enemy. Every last one of them. When it comes to basically all sports apart from soccer, the England-Australia rivalry is through the roof. And to have to root for an Australian, I have to say it was difficult at the start, but he's proving that support well worth it. And I think in an interview, he did say that he was told to go out the back of the end zone and just run a bit of clock, but he just saw it and had to go. But it was nice to have another punter, maintain some hero status with a huge play. John Ryan's was the last one, which was slightly less successful when he got bashed in the head against the Rams, which is one of the more pointless ones. This one was probably more risky, but it was very fun to see it work out. And the sideline were going wild for him. So he's obviously a really popular guy in the team.
Pete Carroll said in the post-game press conference that he did have the option in that particular play if he saw enough room. I just don't know if it was enough room for me to feel comfortable with it. But I know, as Cora pointed out on Facebook, she said that at least we have a punter now that doesn't make crazy faces when he makes big plays. I don't know if that's a positive.
Well, he does make better faces when making big plays than John Ryan. That's for sure.
Right.
So give him credit there. But he's kind of validating the draft pick, right? I remember Seattle being panned by the experts for spending draft capital on
trading
a
punter. Trading up to get a punter in the fifth round. Oh, what a mistake.
Yeah, well, this is what a dude who is an MVP in a bowl game looks like. He makes big plays in big time situations.
100%. He's been easily worth the pick. And if you were given the pick back, which is, often a kind of thing you try and think about, Rashad Penny, if you had your pick back, what would you try and do with it? I don't think there's a fan out there that would want a different outcome with the Dixon pick. I think he's proved a huge net positive and a massively valuable asset to the team.
Yeah, you mentioned Rashad Penny. No touches in this game apart from the kickoff returns. So I know that made Mr. Emmert happy.
Well, it doesn't make me happy. Like, I want him to succeed.
No, but right I know. Now, but you're of the opinion that guys like Chris Carson and mixing in Mike Davis are the two more deserving guys to get touches in the running game.
Yeah, if you don't believe that after watching Chris Carson today, then there's no tape I could ever turn on about any running back ever and show you and be like, that's what tough running looks like. I would show you Earl Campbell tape and you'd be like, nope, not tough runner, not the guy we need. Like, I mean, he's proven it to me all the way through. And this is a guy that I was totally down on at the beginning of last year when they started going to him. And I was like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Should be Thomas Rawls. I was, preaching to everybody. And boy, was I wrong. I mean, Chris Carson he might be my new Seahawk crush.
I'm pleased for Mike Davis as well. There's that famous story that his phone screensaver is still the notification that he got cut from the 49ers. And at some point, you kind of feel you got to get over that. But, if that's what fires him up, then good on him. And you know, it's great that you've got the second guy that almost never has a negative play. You know, there was one even on a first down where he turned 2 yards into four, and the whole system relies on, you know, being in manageable distances at all times. And to have a guy that's able to, you know, give Carson a breather, because Carson is number one at the minute without question, but the fact that they can mix in Mike Davis 10, 11 times a game, and he has an impact almost every time he touches the ball, that's hugely valuable. And I don't think his contribution can be downplayed at all, because he's been a really valuable factor in the last four games.
Mike Davis has been really productive. I mean, just especially in his limited touches, and just the way that the offense looks seamless when he goes out there. There's not a gigantic drop off from Chris Carson to Mike Davis, which also makes me feel a little bit better about if Chris Carson gets hurt again playing this really physical style, we have a guy that I think we could lean on in Mike Davis. He's showing that. If that still is on his home screen on his phone, good on him, man. It's not like Tom Brady's let go of being a 6th round draft pick. He's still pissed about that. Like, to this day. Like, you never let that stuff go. I mean, Sherman's still mad he got drafted in the 6th. You know, like, you got to find whatever that is and hold on to that forever. You can't let it go.
If the worst came to the worst and Chris Carson did get hurt, which, you know, we all pray it doesn't happen, I reckon David Moore is your starting running back. Just give him the ball. he can do it all.
just bypass our 1st round pick and go straight to David Moore. Yeah, why not? He can do it all.
You guys are coming up way short on this. Like, you need to go even further. Not only should you bring in David Moore, but he should just run the Wildcat and like take Russ off the field too. Like, because he is a god sent from the receiving core heavens, and he's really a football player that is unmatched in the NFL. No doubt.
I love the David Moore hype where we're going in this particular episode.
But he floated to the stadium today. Yeah. Didn't even drive.
It always seems like Pete Carroll's trying to find like that Anquan Boldin type player. And now I finally feel like we have it with David Moore. Like, he's the closest we've had to this point throughout Pete Carroll's career. You know, think about all of those receivers that have been drafted in the 3rd and 4th rounds, never really worked out. They went other places, didn't work out well there. But now in the 7th round, you get Chris Carson and David Moore. That seems to be paying off pretty well for them.
Yeah, I mean, John Schneider, who was allegedly on the hot seat for some dodgy draft picks, you know, me included, we were all kind of worried, wondering, was he just lucky in 2012 and going on? He's 2 7th round picks that are going to change the franchise forever and, you know, give you the dynasty back again in David Moore and Chris Carson. And you can just leave me alone now.
I like how we've made this full circle for you, Mr. Nathan, you know, coming in, talking about how you switched your pick from the Seahawks to Detroit. And now we have the two people who are going to be the big part of the future triplets for the Seahawks with Chris Carson, David Moore, and Russell Wilson.
We're all going to need to grow more fingers to accommodate the number of rings that we're going to be wearing going forward. That's all there is to say about it.
Well, I think that's a good place to end the show with the hype of multiple rings in the future for the Seahawks, coming off a 28-14 win on the road. Always good to see a win on the road on that particular field, you know, because, well, we don't need to go back to the 2005 season and relive memories of there too. So.
Yeah, way to bring it back down to a bummer, Brandon. But whatever, I'm going to relish this feeling going into this next 4 weeks that I know is a real difficult stretch. And so I'm flying high, man. I know Adam Nathan's flying high, right, bud?
I'm fired up. Let's go. We should play tonight. We should play the Chargers tonight.
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.